Dream TV with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Thursday, August 12th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to another edition of Wing TV. We're glad everyone is joining us. We want to thank everyone for the emails, especially regarding Art Bell yesterday. A lot of people asking how to get in contact with him, and I forwarded them on to Lisa, and hopefully she's answering everybody, so it might take a day or two.
Yep. But thanks to all of you. We've had an incredible response.
Right. Also now, on the Wing TV homepage today, we have the 10 questions that we mentioned yesterday on the show to Art Bell. So if you're watching this show, click onto those 10 questions, cut and paste them, put them into an email, send them to Art Bell, artbell@mindspring.com. Let him know that you're not going to let him just bury the truth from the American public.
Send them to the mainstream media, too,
right,
while you're at it.
Exactly, yeah, just don't stop there. Now, before we bring today's guest on, a man named Jim Hoffman, who runs a site called WTC7.net, we wanted to fill you in on a couple of the radio appearances that we're making. This afternoon, we're going to be on the Jack Blood Show, which can be found at jackblood.com. Mm-hmm. Also, live with Sherry Schreiner, which is Friday, September 3rd, I believe.
On the Reality Radio Network.
Right. And also, as a pre-9/11 anniversary edition, we're going to be on Visigoth, is From the Grassy Knoll.
Right, PascoFiasco.org.
Right, and I hear through the grapevine that maybe John Kaminsky is going to make an appearance that day too, so we'll keep you informed. So that's what's going on around here. Mm-hmm. Now, we'd like to bring on a gentleman that we're supposed to have on a couple weeks ago, but I don't think we described properly how we'd be calling Eastern Time instead of Pacific Time, so that only kind of fell through. But anyways, Jim, this is Jim Hoffman from WTC7.net. Welcome to Wing TV.
Welcome, Jim.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be on.
All right. I guess we should start off by, why don't you let everyone, again, know how to find your site and what they can expect to find once they get there.
Okay. So my main research site is rooted in the domain www.wtc7.net. Now, that site, wtc7.net, is kind of a front door into the larger site that contains the Luminous Research and all the reporting that I've done on the whole breadth of the 9/11 event. But the WTC7 site itself is focused on the very interesting case of Building 7, the 47-story steel skyscraper that plunged straight into its footprint at 5:20 in the afternoon of September 11, 2001, a case study of controlled demolition. And
right.
I think it's just one of the biggest red flags of the official story, because there's no explaining the demolition of this building. Supposedly was due to fires. This building, this site contains several videos that speak very clearly to what happened to this building. Go to the site and look, go to the videos link and watch the videos. And if you've ever seen a building imploded, you'll recognize immediately what happened to this building.
Right.
And, Jim.
Yeah, should I go on and tell you about the larger site, though, if I could just?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure.
Okay, so under that, there's a larger subdomain called 911research.wtc7.net. And there's a prominent link to that at the homepage of WTC7.net. And if you go there, you'll find this well-organized archive of all kinds of evidence, reporting, and analysis of the breadth of events on September 11th, but still focusing primarily on the physical evidence around the crimes in New York City, the demolitions of the Twin Towers of Building 7.
Jim, Building Number 7 has been the most ignored aspect of 9/11. And we know that there were some small, contained, isolated fires within that building. Do you have any idea how those fires could have started?
Well, to me, they have the appearances of being contrived, because you had actually in about two locations in the building, according to what the photographs show. There's a photograph showed some fires at about the 12th floor, and I think there were maybe some at the 7th floor. But these fires just burned for several hours and remained localized in the same spot as if they were continuously fed by diesel fuel or something. They never spread. They were so small that they should have been put out by the sprinkler system had those been operational.
Uh-huh.
And these puny fires in this building are the supposed, according to government sources, the Federal Emergency Management Agency's report, which, supposedly the last word on the
right.
For the collapse of Building 7. Supposedly these fires brought down the steel frame building, but yet, no, there's not a single case in the history of the use of steel frame high-rise buildings in which average fires, however severe, have ever caused a complete collapse event in any building.
Yeah. But Jim, if you can talk up just a little bit here, but I'm glad you brought that point up, because there's the famous case of the Philadelphia, the Meridian fire, I think in 1991 or whatever, back in the 90s.
The Meridian Plaza fire raged throughout the night for 18 hours, gutted 8 floors of this building, and caused all kinds of damage to the facade and all kinds of minor damage. But it didn't cause any structural damage to the actual steel structure that holds this building up. And, of course, you wouldn't expect that a hydrocarbon fire could cause that kind of damage, because hydrocarbons burning in the atmosphere without systematic pressurization and preheating of the air of the kind that you have in a blast furnace, such fires can almost never get over temperatures of about 800 degrees Celsius.
Because it's not like an...
It's 1,535 degrees Celsius.
So it's not like an acetylene torch or something like that.
Let me ask you this. You say on your site that Building 7, out of all the skyscrapers, remains, the rubble pile, warranted the most painstaking examination, documentation, and analysis of all the three. So talk about the rubble pile for Building 7.
The rubble pile, I'm sorry, I missed the point that you just made. You were saying that, what about the... It deserved most painstaking analysis?
Yes. On your website, you say how it warranted the most painstaking examination and documentation, and yet, of course, they carted that evidence off.
Yes.
It's
true of the entire site at Ground Zero. Building 7 was located on a separate block across Vesey Street from the main World Trade Center complex. It was a World Trade Center building in name only. It was in private ownership. Not like the rest of the World Trade Center, which was publicly owned until just a few weeks before the disaster, there was a 99-year lease that signed over control of the entire complex. But this was on a separate block, and unlike the rest of Ground Zero, where you had the remains of the Twin Towers just strewn all over the place, just blown out for blocks and everything, the rubble pile of Building 7 was extremely tidy. It was piled up in the center of this block that this huge building occupied. It was so tidy that the adjacent streets surrounding this building could easily have been cleared without disturbing the majority of the rubble pile. Furthermore, there were no known people that died in this, no one was thought to have died in the collapse of this building, since it was evacuated long before time in the afternoon when it collapsed. So, therefore, what was the hurry of excavating this rubble pile and removing it?
Exactly.
What happened at Ground Zero was the most systematic evidence destruction operation in the history of the world, it appears, in that the site was sealed off. Investigators were not allowed to see the site of the crime. They had just a farcical investigation where you had these volunteer investigators that weren't even allowed to see the evidence.
Right.
And then meanwhile the site was sealed off, and the only people who were allowed in were people with blowtorches cutting the steel up. Yeah. They didn't actually have to cut that much of it up because it was so thoroughly pulverized.
Putting it
on trucks and putting it on barges destined for blast furnaces in India and China, where it would be destroyed so that no further investigation would be possible.
Yeah. Well, when we, I think you heard at the beginning of the show when we were talking about Art Bell, and he's syndicated in over 500 markets, and we've been asking him for months now why he won't reveal this information to his listeners, and the one thing he keeps coming up with, he says, well, why don't you show us the proof? And we come right back and say, there is no proof, no physical evidence, because immediately the government came in and hauled all of this stuff away. So, isn't it obvious that they had something to cover up?
Oh, yeah, but I would actually quibble with that a bit. Now, it's true that the hardest physical evidence in the form of the actual steel beams and all the material that you would look at the crime scene to try to determine what happened in this incredibly unprecedented event, a steel frame building, going down for no reason, and for that matter, the Twin Towers just exploding into tiny rubble and shredded steel, as mostly because they fell down. I mean, these were completely unprecedented events, and you would think that they would warrant the most carefully, some very serious examination, and yet the entire budget that FEMA used for their investigation was $600,000.
Oh my God!
For this huge event. I mean, that's like I think it was like $40 million that they spent, investigating Bill Clinton.
Right.
Jim, but
what I wanted to quibble with is you're saying there's no evidence left. Well, there is in fact physical evidence left in the form of all the videos and photographs taken of this event, and that's physical evidence because number one, it's not like some of the other evidence that people alleged to talk about in regard. like examining features in the exploding dust puff. So it's this huge body of evidence, hundreds of photographs, all as many as I've been able to find at archives on my site. And what you can do with those photographs is measure things like the rate at which these buildings came down,
right.
the degree to which they blew out, the explosiveness of these events. And I have on my site several what I consider proofs of demolition, not of Building 7, which is, quite a different case in that the way it came down is completely different. It's more like a classical demolition. But in the case of the towers, which exploded outwards, and the way that they came down, the buildings disappeared within this exploding cloud of rubble as fast as the rubble was falling through the air.
Right.
So there's no other explanation than that the structures of these buildings was being removed ahead of the descending cloud of rubble, because otherwise they would have provided some resistance and at least slowed down the collapse, if such a collapse were possible.
Okay, Jim, so Larry Silverstein, the owner of Building 7, has since said that he pulled the building with a controlled demolition.
Yeah, on the documentary that was aired a year after the attack called America Rebuilds, there's this very bizarre passage in which he says, discussing with the fire department and making this decision to pull the building. Well, there's also another excerpt on that same documentary where a Ground Zero worker is talking about pulling Building 6 in the aftermath in the Ground Zero, clearly meaning to demolish the building. So why would the owner have said, we decided to made the decision to pull the building, implying that, they demolished.
And when would that have been wired?
Right. When would they have done this wiring?
Yeah, well, it's clear. I mean, the implication that they made the decision to demolish this building on the afternoon of September 11th is clearly ludicrous, because a controlled demolition is a very complicated engineering task that requires thoroughly rigging a building with small explosive charges throughout the building next to all the adjacent...
How long do you think that would take?
Now, how long would that take? Usually it takes weeks to set up a demolition. And that's a huge building, too. Remember, a 47-story steel skyscraper that occupies the entire city block has about 100, over 100 columns that have to be destroyed, up throughout the building. So, and furthermore, the idea that they could have rigged this building for demolition while there were fires going on.
Yeah, there's pandemonium ensuing in Manhattan, so it's an impossibility, isn't it?
Yeah, but what's really bizarre about it is you have them making a suggestion. And then, meanwhile, there's no hint of that suggestion in the official government report, like the FEMA report, that it's like scratching itself. Well, we can't figure out what built this building fall, but it must have been the fires. Well, why didn't they apparently didn't talk to the owner who is suggesting that the building was demolished?
Right.
Well, I think that this is all part of it's all just part of the cover up. It's a way of putting out a story that is this idea that we decided to pull the building, putting out this story. Whose purpose is just to muddle the issue, to make it less obvious that this building was, this building had to be demolished, and hoping that the fact of how ridiculous this idea is that the building could be for demolition in a few hours will be lost on the public to which this is aimed.
There are a lot of theories circulating around about what happened on 9/11, and we're seeing evidence of a lot of competition between 9/11 truth movement groups. One theory in particular is a hologram theory, where people think it was actually a hologram and not actual planes hitting the building. What do you think is the probability of a hologram occurring on 9/11?
I think it's a non-starter, and I think so. There's been this concerted effort going on for over a year to promote the idea that no, the buildings weren't really hit by the 767s that were Flight 11 and 175. Rather, the North Tower was hit by, or the hologram, or the South Tower, the plane that appeared to plow into the South Tower was a hologram, or it was a plane with explosives, or it had a pod mounted to the bottom, or it fired a missile before it hit the building. And it's obvious to me that all these ideas, which I have no evidentiary support, I mean, the evidence, all these theories are based on grainy video.
Right.
Most of them are just clearly unsupported interpretations. Like, for instance, the pod theory, in which you're supposed to be a pod that's mounted below, what's apparently Flight 175, is really just a specular reflection of the sun shining on the bottom of the fuselage of the plane, and it's interrupted in the middle of the plane by the bulge. All commercial airlines have a bulge where the wings meet the fuselage.
Yeah.
Well, you have these conspiracists making all these assertions like, oh, these were pregnant planes, oh, planes look like that. Well, that's exactly what a 767 looks like.
Yeah. We're so glad.
It's just shocking how far people have gotten with these completely unsupported theories, yeah. And how much,
effort and energy is being wasted on it. Yeah, we're so glad that you're pointing that out, because we know so many people that are pushing the pods and the holograms and the phantom planes, and we keep saying to people, you're like a hamster spinning in a wheel. There's 10 or 12 people in each group sitting there arguing about these little nonsensical things, when what we should be doing is trying to get all this information out to the American public on a wider scale.
More than that, they're fighting.
It's really a damning evidence, like in terms of the demolitions, in terms of Building 7. And even if there was something to these theories about the phantom planes theory, as a meme, as I call it, even if there was something to it, it's not supported by the mountains of evidence that support demolition.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so why do the same people who continue to push the phantom planes meme, why do they implicitly accept the idea of demolition, yet don't talk about it?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let me ask you about a point that Eric Hufschmidt brought up in his book, Painful Questions.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
People, yeah. He said that in a World Trade Center building number 7, on the 23rd floor, there was a command center set up.
That's correct, uh-huh.
That was supposed to be used for Rudolph Giuliani. And he said that there were $15 million worth of renovations, that there were bulletproof windows, the windows were bomb-proof. But on the morning of 9/11, Rudolph Giuliani exited this floor and didn't use it. And he theorizes that this could have been the command center for the people that carried out the attacks. What do you think about that?
I think that's a very likely possibility. Of course, it would be very difficult to prove because
right.
The building was so thoroughly destroyed. One wonders why the building was destroyed,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was destroyed in this very suspicious manner reinforces that idea that there was something to hide. There was this command center, this bunker, essentially, on the 23rd floor, which you can actually see in pictures of the building. If you look at the pictures of the building, there was these two floors where the windows looked a little bit different. And this expanse on the 23rd floor directly overlooked the two twin towers. It looked south towards the two towers. So you had a full view of the entire
right.
height of both towers. So if they, if they had set out to demolish the towers, this would be the perfect vantage point and control center from which to execute that operation.
Do we know yet the extent of the data that was lost by the Securities and Exchange Commission, the FBI, and the CIA, and whatever other governmental agencies existed in that building?
Well, we do know that thousands of case files were lost by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which was one of the very short list of tenants of Building 7. It's very interesting. The Building 7 housed the New York office of the CIA and had just a very small list of government agencies like the Giuliani's Office of Emergency Management, and just banking institutions, financial institutions. The tenant list is only about 12 long. And it's very interesting that right as the scandals were erupting, where, with WorldCom and, Enron, all these scandals were going on before 9/11, all of a sudden, SEC loses thousands of case files, not to mention the fact that all these scandals were overshadowed then by 9/11.
Right.
So is it plausible to you that these government agencies would be okay with losing all that data since the owner has announced that he had deliberately pulled the buildings?
I mean, that's another really huge red flag. Why aren't there any lawsuits? Why aren't any of the tenants of these buildings suing the owner who's admitted that he demolished the building?
Exactly.
Right, he's trying to get money, and meanwhile, he could be sued, couldn't he?
He's getting huge amounts of money.
Right.
In fact, they already settled the first insurance claim. The owner who already owned Building 7, Silverstein Properties built Building 7 back in about 85, they only acquired control of the entire World Trade Center complex 6 weeks before the disaster.
Hmm.
The entire World Trade Center complex was under the control of the Port Authority since it was built with public money, but somehow they were
able
to lease the entire complex under a 99-year lease to Silverstein Properties, who then secured a very handsome insurance policy with a double terrorist attack provision wherein if there were two terrorist attacks, he would be able to collect double the value of the terrorist complex.
Well,
what have you heard? There's rumors that the World Trade Center has been unprofitable for quite some time.
Oh, that's more than a rumor. I mean, they had a very great difficulty ever getting anywhere near full capacity of the building. For a decade, they stood at just partial occupancy. And then as time went on, these buildings became more and more obsolete. There were problems with the asbestos, and there was some asbestos abatement, but there were other asbestos in this building that would have been extremely expensive to remove that they never did. Furthermore, these buildings needed, well, I don't know what the figure is, but millions of dollars of renovations just to make them comparable and competitive with other modern offices.
So it's convenient, then, that all of a sudden all of these buildings in this complex fall on the morning of 9/11.
Pretty timely.
Yeah, and the owner gets this huge payout, and then he has all this property that's been completely, you know, wiped clean that he can start building a new set of buildings on.
Yeah. Well, Jim, before we run out of time here, once again, tell everyone how they can find your main site, and also tell them about your upcoming book that should be released in the very near future.
Okay, the site, again, is WTC7.net. That's WTC as in World Trade Center and the numeral 7, WTC7.net. And if you go there, be sure to traverse the link to 9/11 Research, which is this huge research site that has all of, you know, the biggest compilation of photographs, videos, and analysis, you know, focusing on what happened in New York City, Building 7 and the Twin Towers, and to a lesser extent, the lack of military response, you know, some of the other red flags, the analysis of the Pentagon attack, which I think is much, much less clear exactly what happened there. We have been selling this booklet, Great Crimes, The Greater Cover-Up, which was in the form of an open letter to the families, but a more recent effort is the book that we're about to release called Waking Up From Our Nightmare, The 9/11 Crimes in New York City. And this book is thoroughly sets forth the case of the physical evidence and what it shows about what happened to the buildings in New York City and who was behind it.
Well, Jim, you've got to make sure you send us a copy of that book as soon as it comes out. We'll show everybody here on our Wing TV show. And we just want to thank you. You're one of the sane ones out there, you know? We get so tired of hearing about phantom planes and holograms. And
the infighting among the 9/11 movements. Everyone's fighting over whose theory is the best.
And they're losing sight of the bigger picture that, like, we have so much evidence right now. What we have to do is get it out to a wider audience.
Yeah, it's a classic problem with activist groups that they become, that they lose the sense of what needs to happen in terms of outreach and be tied up in their own struggles. And it's just the nature of these things that people, you know, fail to get to keep the larger picture. But that's what we have to keep focused on, is just that we have mountains of evidence of the complicity of people inside the government in the attacks, the stand downs, the demolitions, so many things.
And what we need is more clarity, not muddying the water with this info.
Well, everybody, if you haven't been there yet, go to WTC7.net. This is Jim Hoffman. He's doing a hell of a job there. He's one of the ones that's putting out the real information, and he's not fogging your minds up with this nonsense. WTC7.net.
Jim, we thank you very much for taking the time.
Keep up the good work, and send us a copy of that book as soon as it comes out.
We will. Thanks.
Also, tune in to the Jack Blood Show this afternoon, jackblood.com. And Jim, thank you once again.
Thank
you. We'll see you again tomorrow on Wing TV.
It's a busy day. Take care.